According to the International Convention on the Rights of the Child, the most ratified of all UN treaties, no child shall be subjected to torture or other cruel, inhuman or degrading treatment or punishment. And yet the World's Women 2000 report from the UN Statistics Division found that in some African countries more than half of all girls and women had undergone female genital mutilation. In this program we will discuss female genital mutilation, what it is, why it happens and what's being done. We'll then take a quick look back in time to another crippling cultural practice and then come home to Australia to see what actions are being taken to protect women and children on our very own shores.
I was only six. My grandmother took me to this place. She told me it was special. There were these women there. They held me down and forced my legs open. I thought they were going to tear me apart. They forced a bag of rags into my mouth. This woman came towards me. She had a razor blade and a razor blade holder. She started to cut me. The pain was really bad. The woman kept pulling and pulling on my legs. I blacked out. When I came to, I was bound from my hips to my ankles. I got a fever and was really sick. I nearly died. It's not religion. It's a long tradition with our people. It's no longer practiced by most people in the cities, but it is still done in the country. The older people still think it's okay. I'm not angry at my parents. If they hadn't done it to me, I would have been teased and made to feel I was not part of the community. I would not be considered feminine. I would be like a man.
The ritual cutting and alteration of the genitalia of female infants, girls, and adolescents has been a long tradition. It persists today primarily in Africa and among small communities in the Middle East and Asia. The spectrum of these procedures has been termed female circumcision, or more frequently, female genital mutilation, as a collective name describing several different traditional rituals that emphasize the physical disfigurement associated with the practice. It is estimated over 100 million women have undergone the practice, and that between 4 and 5 million procedures are performed every year on female infants and girls, with the most severe types of mutilation carried out in Somalia and Sudanese populations. Female genital mutilation is most often performed between the ages of 4 and 10 years, although in some communities it may be practiced on infants or postponed until just before marriage. Typically, a local village practitioner, layperson, or midwife is engaged for a fee to perform the procedure. This is done without anesthesia, using a variety of instruments such as knives, razor blades, broken glass, or scissors. In developed countries, physicians may be sought to perform the procedure under sterile conditions with the use of anesthesia. The various ritual genital practices are classified into four types based on the severity of structural disfigurement. Type 1, often termed clitorectomy, involves cutting the skin surrounding the clitoris, with or without cutting away part or all of the clitoris. Type 2 is referred to as excision, and is the removal of the entire clitoris and part or all of the outer lips of the vagina. Crude stitches of catgut or thorns may be used to control bleeding from the clitoral artery and raw tissue surfaces, or mud poultices may be applied to the perineum. In type 3, known as infibulation, the most severe form of mutilation, the entire clitoris, some or all of the outer lips of the vagina, are cut away, and the raw surfaces are stitched together to cover the urethra and vaginal openings, leaving a small hole for urinary and menstrual flow. Type 4 includes different practices of varying severity, including pricking, piercing, or incision of the clitoris or the labia. Stretching the clitoris and or labia, burning the clitoris, and scraping or introduction of corrosive substances into the vagina. The physical complications include hemorrhage, shock, secondary to blood loss or pain, local infection, and failure to heal, blood poisoning, tetanus, trauma to adjacent structures, and urinary retention. Infibulation type 3 genital mutilation is often associated with long-term gynecological and urinary tract difficulties. More serious complications include pelvic infections, retention of menstrual blood, painful intercourse, infertility, recurrent urinary infections, and death. Less well understood are the psychological, sexual, and social consequences of female genital mutilation, because little research has been conducted in countries where the practice is endemic. However, personal accounts by women who've had a ritual procedure recount anxiety before the event, terror at being seized and forcibly held during the event, great difficulty during childbirth, and a lack of sexual pleasure during intercourse. Female genital mutilation has been documented in individuals from many religions, including Christians, Muslims, and Jews. Some proponents of the practice claim that it is required by the Islamic faith. However, scholars and theologians of Islam state that female circumcision is not prescribed by their religious doctrine. Copeman summarized four reasons to explain the practice. 1. To preserve group identity. 2. To help maintain cleanliness and health. 3. To preserve virginity and family honor and prevent immorality. And 4. To further marriage goals, including enhancement of sexual pleasure for men. The preservation of cultural identity has also been noted by Turbia to be of particular importance for groups who have previously faced colonization and immigrants threatened by a dominant culture. The procedure is endemic in poor societies where marriage is essential to the social and economic security for women. It becomes a physical sign of a woman's marriageability, with social control exercised over her sexual pleasure by clitorectomy and over reproduction by infibulation. When parents request a ritual genital procedure for their daughter, they believe it will promote their daughter's integration into their culture, protect her virginity, and therefore protect her desirability as a marriage partner. Female genital mutilation has been characterized as a practice that violates the rights of infants and children to good health and well-being, part of a universal standard of basic human rights. On the 23rd of April 2001, the United Nations Economic and Social Council's Commission on Human Rights 57th session adopted four resolutions on women. One of these resolutions, Resolution 2001/49, concentrated on violence against women. Part 5 of this resolution strongly condemns physical, sexual, and psychological violence occurring in the family, which encompasses, but is not limited to, battering, sexual abuse of female children in the household, dowry-related violence, marital rape, female infanticide, female genital mutilation and other traditional practices harmful to women, non-spousal violence, and violence related to exploitation. The Convention on the Rights of the Child states in Article 19 that all state parties should take all appropriate legislative, administrative, social, and educational measures to protect the child from all forms of physical or mental violence, injury or abuse, neglect or negligent treatment, maltreatment or exploitation including sexual abuse, while in the care of parents, legal guardians, or any other person who has the care of the child. The United Nations Population Fund Programme for Action from the International Convention on Population and Development said that the human rights of women and the girl child are an inalienable, integral, and indivisible part of universal human rights.
From a song recorded in 1937, the mothers sing to the daughters on the day of circumcision. We used to be friends, but today I am your master, for I am a man. Look, I have a knife in my hand and will operate on you. Your clitoris, which you guard so jealously, I will cut off and throw away, for today I am a man. My heart is cold, otherwise I could not do this to you. After the operation, the girls are humiliated and mocked by the other women present. They sing, "You thought nobody could overcome you. You ate by yourself, you ran fast, but now you're wounded. You said no one could ever stop you, but today you were held by two women. You used to take care of yourself, but now someone else has to wash you and nurse you. You made love, but that's impossible now. You used to piss well, but from now on you will cry when you piss. You used to move so graciously with closed legs, but now you walk with your thighs apart like a toad or a mouse."
Chinese foot binding was also considered desirable for girls.
I am now 72. I remember. I was 6 when my mother called me into the kitchen and told me it was time to bind my feet. She told me to prepare for the pain. Nothing would prepare me for the pain. I was then propped on a chair and my feet were placed in a bucket of warm water. My mother grabbed my right foot and slowly started to bend my feet backwards and forwards. I could feel the bones breaking and I tried to kick her. I screamed and I yelled, but she kept going. She kept going until she had folded my foot completely in half, with my toes touching my heel. When I looked down, my foot looked like a clenched fist. Only my big toe hadn't been broken. My mother then bound my feet tightly into place with a long strip of white cloth. She then broke my other foot. I couldn't walk, I couldn't sleep, I could no longer run into the fields with my brothers. I tried to release the bandages a little, but my parents found out and sewed my toes to my heels with a needle and thread. I used to climb trees, you know, but no more. I am always in pain. One day, I asked my mother why she did this to me. She told me it was because she loved me, that if she bound my feet, I could marry a rich man. She said, no man would ever look at me if I didn't have bound feet.
Having tiny feet was considered the height of femininity. The bound foot was seen as the most prized sexual organ, and it was even claimed that foot binding strengthened the vaginal muscles, giving men the sensation of making love to a virgin. Changes in societal attitudes have made the practice nearly extinct. The same process is being encouraged by many NGOs and humanitarian organizations to combat female genital mutilation. The UN Population Fund is incorporating female genital mutilation into the core areas of its mandate. In Uganda, the Reproductive Education and Community Health Program promotes ceremonies which mark the passage into adulthood with dancing and symbolic gift-giving, without the actual cutting. The incidence of mutilation in Uganda has fallen by 36%. The Ghanaian government passed legislation to outlaw female genital mutilation, although independent evidence states the practice is still continuing, and no arrests were made in 1999. The Commission on Human Rights Resolution 2001/49 Part 19 urges states to integrate a gender perspective into international immigration and asylum policies, regulations and practices, as appropriate to promote and protect the rights of all women, including the consideration of steps to recognise gender-based persecution and violence when assessing grounds for granting refugee status and asylum. In spite of this, the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade still send refugees home who have sought protection because of fears of female genital mutilation. A search of Refugee Review Tribunal documents shows a plethora of cases of women and girls who have been refused asylum from female genital mutilation, with the Department of Immigration and Ethnic Affairs and Trade refusing to grant protection visas under the Immigration Act of 1958 and the Migration Reform Act of 1992, although female genital mutilation is illegal in Australia.
The Human Rights Defender, February-March 2001, says more women and girls die each year because of gender-based discrimination and violence than as a result of any other type of human rights abuse. It is indefensible even today that many governments are doing little to ensure women have the full range of human rights.
To escape the lion by taking refuge in the river is only to encounter a new and sinister enemy beneath the surface. When will it ever end?